Where warp meets weft.
Where warp meets weft.
This is Weavecast with Sine Mitchell.
Episode 41, Jacquard Weaving. This episode, we're talking about weaving on Jacquard looms. We speak with Alice Schlein, who is probably best known for her work on network drafting, but who is also an avid Jacquard weaver. Then we have a delightful chat with Richard and Christine Jarian, two weavers who work together to restore a vintage Jacquard loom at the Henry Ford Museum. Our sponsor this episode is Lone Star Loom Room, bringing you the finest Swedish yarns. They offer Egyptian cottons, linen, cotylin, cotton rug warp, and more, all in their full color range at great prices. You can find them online at lonestarloomroom.com. Before we get into the news and views, I'm going to start off with a correction. Last episode, we mentioned Alice Schlein as the author of The Woven Pixel, a book about designing for weaving using Adobe Photoshop. Alice is only half the writing team on that book. Her co-author was Bhakti Zeek. Apologies for that omission. For more information about Bhakti and her work, you can check out her website. There will be a link in the show notes. I've got an announcement from across the Atlantic. Callie Booker in Scotland wrote to tell me that the Journal of Weavers, Spinners and Dyers, which is a UK Weaving Association journal, is putting out a special tribute issue honoring Peter Collingwood. A free copy of this tribute issue will be sent out to every journal subscriber, and you can also purchase this publication separately. For more information and details about that, go check out the journal's website. As before, there will be a link on the show notes. In other news in the weaving world, Liz Gibson, who has for many years done a wonderful job as the managing editor of Handwoven, is moving on. So there is now an opening at Handwoven for a new managing editor. This is the person who takes care of the operational details of getting the magazine to press. This person also manages the columns and special features. As somebody who writes a column for Handwoven, I think it'd be really great if somebody fun and easy to work with got this job. So if you're a fun and easy to work with person who loves weaving and loves editing, this might be your opportunity. You can check out the job description on the Interweave Press website. One last note before we head off to the audio interviews. Weavecast will be going on hiatus for the months of August and September. I've been doing the show for 2.5 years, and it's time for a reboot. So during the hiatus, I'll be looking at some improvements to the format of the show, planning the production schedule with the ensemble team, and working on a very special audio project. We'll be back the first week of October with some great new interviews. Here with Alice Schlein, who has generously offered to come talk to us. Thank you and welcome.
I'm delighted to be here. Thanks.
Hand weaving is such an unusual profession. How did you get into it?
Well, I started a long time ago. I really owe a lot of the joy that I've had in weaving to my sixth grade teacher. She had a four-shaft loom in the classroom, and everybody in the class got to weave a little table runner in the honeysuckle pattern. It was an overshot pattern. And that was so exciting. I knew that someday I had to have a loom of my own and do some of that stuff. So as a young adult, I bought a loom, I bought a book, and I taught myself to weave. I've been weaving ever since. My first loom was a four-shaft table loom, and then I graduated to 8 shafts, and then at some point I got a 16-shaft Dobby loom, and that was about the time that the first personal computers were available. I had an Apple II Plus. I got the CompuDobby box to connect the computer to the loom, and that started me off on computer-aided drafting. Then I moved on to 24 shafts, and now I have a 40-shaft Dobby loom, and in 2000 I became the very lucky owner of a TC1, which is a Jacquard type loom. So I do a lot of my work now in Jacquard and also on Dobby. And there's a lot of connection between the two because they're both based on the same weave structures. I like to think of weave structure as the basis for all designing, no matter what type of loom you're using.
Well, that's quite the progression. One of the things you're most noted for is your network drafting because of the wonderful book you published on it. I'm curious, how did you come up with that and what made you want to write a book about it?
Well, I first became aware of the subject when I saw a book which had been translated from the French, and the original authors were Masson and Roussel. Louise Berube did the English translation. It was mostly a mathematical work, but the diagrams were very intriguing, and I saw that there were possibilities there that for designing curves on a shaft loom. And the translation was a little awkward, and also the text was very math-heavy, and I really don't have a math background. But based on the drawings, I knew that this was something I'd like to learn about. So basically, I started experimenting on my own with the techniques, and I found ways that I could use network drafting in my own Dobby work, and then I started trying to explain it to other weavers and developed a system whereby people could work from basic weave structure on through various types of pattern lines and create designs for any number of shafts, usually from 8 shafts and above. And it was a way of breaking out of the grid. And these designs, even though they have a lot of curves, they're not exactly like jacquard designing because you don't have any clean-cut edges. A characteristic of network drafting is the fuzziness at the edges where one structure meets another. But I don't consider that a flaw. It's just a characteristic of network drafting. And after I wrote my book, this was in 1994, the subject caught on very quickly, and it was adopted by weavers all over the world, hand weavers especially. And it all goes back to Masson and Roussel.
Well, I remember when I first saw your pizza cloth, I think it was in Weavers. It was a revelation. It was like, circles, finally circles.
Right.
So I was very intrigued by it. What would you describe as the characteristic of network drafting?
It's a way of working with structure. So you can take any structure, for instance, reverse twills, a 1-3 twill and a 3-1 twill. If you think about a light warp and a dark weft, a 1-3 twill will appear mostly light, and a 3-1 twill will appear mostly dark. So if you want to use those two weaves in a curved design, you would use a network drafting technique. It's a way of using weave structures. It's not a structure per se, because you could use the twill structure, you could use satin structure, you could use double weave structure. Any structure can be applied to it. But the basis of the system is finding a grid that corresponds to the size of your weave structure. So for instance, a 4-end twill would be based on a 4x4 grid. If you think of 4 pixels high by 4 pixels wide, and then you construct a network and you base your network on that small initial size. And then you make sure that your threading conforms to that network. And if you do that, any weave structures that you plot on that lift plan for a dobby or for a table loom, if your threading conforms to the network, then all the structures will weave correctly on that threading, and there will be no long skips where one structure meets another structure, and the weaves will work. Everything works because of the network, and that's why we call it network drafting.
These days you have a new passion that you're exploring. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Right. I've been working with Lompus weave for the last couple of years. Lompus is a type of double weave. There's a ground weave and there's a pattern weave. Where the pattern weave appears on the surface, the two cloths are integral. They're joined. Where the ground weave weaves on top, you can either have a space between the two layers or else they can be joined. Basically, it's a way of featuring a fancy yarn or a special effect yarn on the surface of the fabric. I've found it very amusing to use hand-spun yarn in my Lompus work. It's probably a little bit unusual because, particularly on the jacquard loom, you ordinarily won't see hand-spun yarns in use. It's a very technical loom, and particularly in industry, they just wouldn't use hand spun. But since my TC1 is a hand loom, and I spin my own yarn for some of these pieces, I think the combination is very interesting, and I don't know of anyone else who's doing that at the moment.
That's very interesting. So what was it that made you jump into a jacquard loom? Because they're not cheap.
They're not cheap, and it was quite a commitment to acquire it. When I first saw the jacquard loom, I was immediately hooked by it. Any Dobby weaver who sees one, I think, feels that same lust for this new piece of wonderful equipment. I think what appealed to me is that I've always been interested in figuring out how you could get a digital image into the cloth, whether it's with cross-stitch embroidery or pickup techniques in weaving or loom control in Dobby. Now, with a Dobby loom, you're very limited because you only have like 16 shafts or 24 shafts or however many shafts you have. So the pixel size of the image is very limited. But all of a sudden, when you have a jacquard loom, you have individual control over every single thread in your warp. And if you think of the warp threads as the number of pixels in the horizontal dimension of your image, you can have every single pixel correspond to a different thread. So all of a sudden there's terrific freedom of design, and it's just the ultimate high as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it seems to me like the natural evolution. You started with network drafting, try to break out of the grid, and now finally with jacquard weaving, you're out of the grid.
Right. It is a natural progression, but what's really interesting is that you can go back in the other direction, too. The type of designing you do for jacquard work can also be applied to your Dobby work. So when I first realized that you could use Photoshop as a design tool for jacquard, I thought, well, why can't we do this for Dobby as well? So I started using some of the same techniques that I use in jacquard design and building lift plans for my Dobby work in the same way. It's the same process, except that the canvas you're using is only, for instance, if you have a 24 shaft loom, your canvas would be 24 pixels wide instead of like 880 as you would have on the TC1. Or now AVL has also come out with a new model of jacquard loom for the studio weaver. I think that's a multiple of 120 threads. So I think if you have six modules, you're working with 720 warp ends. So you might want to start with an image, whether it's a photograph or a scan or whatever, anything digital, it would be 720 pixels wide.
I was looking at the AVL, they had it upstairs. It seems much more compact than the TC1.
Well, it's a totally different principle, and they have totally different features. But what they do have in common is the single thread control, and you design for them in the same way. You have to produce some sort of black and white image file, like a bitmapped file, and every black pixel means the warp thread at that particular intersection goes up, and a white pixel means it stays down. And that's all the loom needs to know in order to interpret your files. But you have to be the one to be in control of the design and also be in control of the weave structures. So in order to design that way, you have to understand weave structures and program that into your work.
Is there software specifically for jacquard?
There is. There's software specifically for jacquard. Most of it has been created for industry, and so it's very expensive. But as many of us have discovered, it's also possible to design in Photoshop, and even in the lower-priced version of Photoshop, which is Photoshop Elements, and it's a little more work, but if you understand structure, you can build your own library of pattern weaves and do all of your designing in Photoshop and just output a black and white file from Photoshop, send it to the loom. That's all you need to know. You don't have to spend thousands of dollars for fancy industrial-grade jacquard software.
So this designing process using Photoshop, is this what you talk about in the Woven Pixel?
Right. Bhakti Seek and I decided to get together to write the Woven Pixel about 2 years ago. Well, actually, we started more than 2 years ago because it took us 2 years to write the book. Bhakti has a very strong background in structure and in design. I was pretty strong in Photoshop, and I also knew a lot about weave structure from my Dobby work. It was a good pairing. She was in New Mexico at the time, and I was in South Carolina, so we did most of the writing on the internet. We would send each other chapters. I would write a chapter, send it to her for review and critique. She would write a chapter, send it to me for review. And then two or three times we would get together in person and try to put this whole thing together. And that's how the book came about.
What kind of audience did you write the book for?
We wrote it for weavers who were either considering purchasing their own jacquard looms, or for people who were studying jacquard in a university setting, or for designers who were working in industry. Anybody who was either working in jacquard or thought they might like to learn about it. That's pretty much the audience we've reached.
If somebody had like a 16 or a 24 shaft computer controlled loom, would they be able to take things from the book and apply it to their weaving?
Absolutely. And that's been extremely interesting. We do have a chapter in the book that tells how to interpret this material specifically for Dobby work. The Dobby weavers have just taken it up very enthusiastically. I don't know percentage-wise how many of our customers are Dobby weavers as opposed to jacquard weavers, but a very large number. That was a big surprise to us, how many Dobby weavers have actually adopted the techniques and used it for their Dobby work. I think there's even an online study group devoted to woven pixel for Dobby.
I see you have some of your work here. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Sure. These pieces are Lampas pieces that I brought to show you. This one is an upholstery sample where I've used hand-spun wool for the pattern wefts. There are two pattern wefts, as you can see, the orangey ones and the blue ones. And this black area is where the ground weave shows. The ground weave is a broken twill, and the pattern weaves are satin. And you can see that there are two warps. The black warp is tencel, and the pattern warp is a very fine peach-colored silk. And the ratio of the warps is two ground warps to one pattern warp. And that's how the loom is set up. There's a definite right and wrong side.
It's very stunning. It looks like paint splotches right on a background of stripes. It's very lovely.
These are also Lampas pieces. This started out as a photograph, and in Photoshop I was able to put a transparent layer over the photograph, and with a pen and a graphics tablet, I drew in a transparent layer over the photograph. So I was able to have my drawing pretty much conform to the photograph. And then I reduced the image to three colors, white, black, and a gray background. And the black is represented by the ground weave. It's the black outlines. And the interior of the figures is one pattern weft, and the background is a second pattern weft.
And what's really interesting to me is your other warp. It looks like the same peachy silk again.
Right. That is pattern warp, and it's in this white area and in the beige area. I know it's hard to envision this when you're listening and you don't see the piece right in front of you.
It looks a lot like a black and white line drawing.
It looks like a line drawing, and the areas where the lines appear are really ground weave peeking out through the pattern weaves.
So it seems an interesting choice for something that's so monochromatic to have this little dots of peach. Was that done deliberately?
It was. That was one of the things Bhakti told me, that peach was a very neutral color, and it was used traditionally in Lampas weaves as the neutral pattern warp because it kind of blended in with many other colors. Oh, here's one that you might enjoy since you have a young weaver in your household. This is a drawing that my grandson did of a pirate ship. He's pirate mad these days. I scanned his drawing and interpreted it in Lampas weave.
It's brilliant. They look very vicious.
And here's another Lampas weave. This was from a photograph in Brattonsville, South Carolina. It's a historic village. And it was an antique bed in an old log cabin. I worked from the photograph. And then the area where the bed cover shows, I wanted to simulate a coverlet pattern. So I inserted a little Dobby pattern.
Yeah, it's really neat. I mean, it looks, you can tell it's very jacquardy with the line drawing. And then
right.
You have this little part that looks traditionally
right.
woven. Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Neat work.
Thank you.
You're definitely making good use of that jacquard.
Oh, I love it. I love it. It's wonderful.
So what do you think is coming up for you on the horizon? What's in the future?
I would like to do another book, and I haven't quite decided what it's going to be. I think it's going to be about Lampas because there seems to be a lot of interest in it. There is not a whole lot of material available about Lampas that's currently in print, so I think that would be a very timely contribution, and I want to aim it mostly towards Dobby weavers.
And you recently had an article come out about Lampas.
Right, in Shuttle, Spindle, and Dye Pot, I wrote about my Lampas work with hand-spun wefts, and there's a little bit of technical information about the Lampas structure for Dobby looms, so people who are interested in Lampas might check that out, and there's also some suggested Lampas bibliography there.
I was surprised to find out you were a hand spinner, because I'm so used to thinking of you as a very technical weaver. How long have you been spinning?
Oh, I've been spinning for years. I don't even know how long it's been, but I find it an interesting mindless pursuit. It's very relaxing. It's something I like to do in the evening while I'm listening to music or listening to podcasts. And I'm not a technical spinner. I have no pretensions toward any type of control over my spinning. I'll spin whatever is available, but I do like to collect my hand-spun yarns in a basket and just look at them, and then when I'm ready to do my next Lampas piece, I just select from what's in the basket.
So what do you spin when you spin?
I usually purchase roving that's been hand-dyed or prepared in some way so that I don't have to start from the raw fleece. I mean, you have to draw the line someplace, right? I don't do any dyeing either. There's just no space in my studio for that kind of equipment. I purchase the stuff ready to spin.
But silk, wool, linen?
All of the above, okay. And tencel combinations of wool and silk. I don't spin much cotton, but all the other stuff.
So you kind of encompass it from the very basics of spinning all the way through to the high end of jacquard.
Right.
Thank you so much for making time and sitting down and chatting with us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Sign.
My name is Chris Jarian. I'm from Beverly Hills, Michigan.
And I'm Richard Jarian, also from Beverly Hills, Michigan.
We happen to be married to each other.
Yeah. I've been for over 20 years.
Oh, congratulations. You worked on restoring the jacquard loom at the Henry Ford Museum, is that correct?
That's right. Over the last year and a half, we restored that loom, a loom that hadn't worked in over 35 years, and now we're weaving.
How did you get involved with that process?
I used to work at Ford Motor Company, which was directly across the street from the Henry Ford Museum, and as a weaver, I would go over to visit the museum on my lunch hours, visit the weaving shop and see this marvelous loom, and no one was ever weaving on it. And over the years, it began to show its age. And as I came closer to retirement, I decided that it's something that I wanted to do was to restore this back to operation. Spoke to the people in the management there, and they liked the idea. And in the end of 2006, I started working on the loom, and the two of us together have done the restoration of it and been trained how to use a jacquard loom.
A jacquard loom is such a complicated piece of equipment. How do you go about finding out what you need to do to restore it?
It has a simple function, and its simple function is to lift individual warp threads. There's been quite a bit written about jacquard looms over the years, so you first start acquiring old weaving books and reading about it and understanding how the machine is supposed to work, the things that are supposed to lift, the levers, what they're supposed to do in terms of controlling which direction the loom weaves in. Then you begin to slowly, carefully take it apart and clean it. And then with an understanding of how it's supposed to work from the historical texts, you can begin to sort out the parts of it that have been damaged and need to be repaired. And then you have to eventually go to school and learn how to weave on one.
Yes. We went to the loom room in Staffordshire in the UK to actually get hands-on experience with old jacquard hand looms from the very beginning of the design process up through generating a mizzen card, cutting cards, and then actually weaving on the looms. And without that, even if we had a functional loom, I'm not sure we would have been able to make it work. So that was key to the whole process.
We spent 2 weeks in the home of Stavy Harvey Brown, She was our instructor and took us through the entire process. It was a very interesting experience, of course, living in the home there with the family, with the looms, and working on them every day from 8 o'clock in the morning through till 7 o'clock at night, going through the whole process of making a jacquard cloth.
It was a little bit like being in an old New England textile mill in that the hours, I mean, it was practically sun up to sun down, and you didn't get any time off. I mean, when we were there 2 weeks, we were there working for 2 weeks, so you really got an idea of what it must have been like working in a mill in the old days.
Were the looms you were studying on the 19th century looms?
Yes, yes. She has four what they called sampling jacquard looms, 200 hook heads, and they're about 14-inch weaving width. They came out of, I think, the University of Leeds, and they used them in their curriculum there for a very long time. And, of course, they probably are now doing computer-assisted weaving there rather than using the old jacquard heads, and so they found a new home with Stacy.
So can you briefly describe how the jacquard loom that you worked on operates?
Yes, we will try. Again, the purpose of the jacquard loom is to independently control each individual warp thread. And each warp thread is connected by a cord to a hook that's up in the machine. There is a mechanism in the machine, that jacquard head, which connects or disconnects that hook from the lifting mechanism. The jacquard head knows what to do from the information that's stored in the punched holes in the string of cards, the jacquard cards. So the cards index into the machine. The machine determines whether there is a hole or not a hole in each of the positions for each of the warp threads. And if there is a hole, a warp thread will lift. And if there isn't a hole, the warp thread stays down. And as a result, you can select one by one each warp thread to be raised or lowered.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it works. It sounds really simple. Trying to explain this to the public is not always so simple, though. That's the purpose of what we're doing there, is trying to interpret this machine for the visitors that come in and out every day. And the machine had sat there for more than 30 years doing nothing. And now people are getting very excited about seeing this thing actually in action and seeing the cloth coming off of it. It's really turned out to be quite a popular exhibit, which of course makes us very happy.
Could you describe for the listeners what the cloth looks like that you designed?
The design that we're doing is a reproduction of the same design that was first woven on the machine when it was constructed at the village in 1934. It's a piece of a motif from an Indiana coverlet that was woven in the mid-19th century. It's a pattern called Frenchman's Fancy, and it's got a central floral medallion with four flowers coming off the edges and then bordering around all four sides of sort of a crosshatch design, and we think it's lovely.
It's a double weave structure. It's a dark blue and white, which is pretty traditional of Indiana coverlets. It's got a repeat and a double mirrored structure in the middle. It has a left to right mirror, and in the center portion of the design, a front to back mirror. So you, while you're weaving it, you weave halfway through the design and then throw the machine into reverse and weave the cards in the opposite order to get the last half of the piece. But it is a double weave, alternating blue and white warp threads and blue and white weft threads. It's a cotton warp and a woolen weft. It's a very traditional design. There are almost 700 punched cards that are required to make this design. The borders have their own set of punched cards, and the center field has its set of punched cards, so that you can actually vary the design of the border independent of the center field. When this was first done, the borders said 1934 Edison Institute, and we've updated that. It now says 2008 Greenfield Village.
Do you have a sample at the museum of the original textiles that were woven on it?
We have only been able to find one partial piece of this in the archives of the museum. There may be more, but we haven't found them yet.
Have you looked at any of the electronic jacquards that are over in the dealer's room?
Oh, yes. Yes. They're much quieter. When you weave on an old loom, When the Jacquard head drops, the whole building almost shakes. It's a very loud machine, but it has a very satisfying sound, too. I mean, it sounds very mechanical. It clunks, it thumps. The modern machines, of course, have nice sort of whooshing sounds, and they're much more refined. I don't know, I like the old clunking and thumping myself.
We've tried both the TC1 and the new AVL looms, and they're lovely machines.
But, yeah.
They are, and they're very popular here. Many people have been weaving on them, so much so that when we ask folks questions as they relate to the old mechanical Jacquards, there are very few people who have the background to understand what they did 100 years ago. It's actually one of the reasons why what we're doing at the museum is so important, because it's retaining that knowledge of the early Jacquard weaving.
As far as we know, there's an operating Jacquard, a hand Jacquard at the Shelburne Museum in Vermont, and there's also one at the Ontario Science Center in Toronto. And we've heard rumors that they're trying to put one together, another one in Ontario, someplace near Kingston. There's still a little bit of this tradition going on, but not a lot.
What are the cards made out of?
They're cardboard.
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 They're cardboard.
Special cardboard.
And it's special cardboard that is very stable.
It doesn't warp.
This is what they look like up close. They're laced together with linen lace. The holes, the big holes at the ends of the cards go on pegs on the cylinders that are rotating, that index into the machine. And these are the little holes that push on the pins that either connect or disconnect the lifters to raise the warps.
Interesting. It looks like two sets of three dots wide.
What you have is a maximum, the way the machine's set up now, of eight holes in any column. This a column going this way. You have, in this particular card, that you can have up to 46 columns running this way of eight holes. Threads run from the machine down to a board. Below the board are the heddles with the eyes for the warp. Mm-hmm. So there are rows of eight threads running across this board, which is called a comber board. What the card is doing is this would be hole number one, hole number two, hole number three, hole number four, hole number five, six, seven, and eight. And if that hole is punched, then that thread lifts. If that hole's not punched, it doesn't.
So is there like a hook that slides up through the hole?
In the rest position, the hook is engaged. What the action of the head does is when it doesn't find a hole in the card, it depresses a spring which pushes the hook off the lifter.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. It seems sort of like backwards to me, but that's the way it works.
You have a cord that runs vertically. In the middle of it, there's an eyelet, and your warp thread goes through that. At the bottom, there's a weight that keeps everything stretched down. This comes up to a rod that comes up. It's bent, and it goes over top of a lifting knife called a griff. And all these things are positioned so that every time I step on a treadle, this griff moves up and lifts all these pins. Now, connected to each one of the hooks is a lateral pin.
Oh, I see.
So, to look at the first one. You can see that the top one, top pin, is connected to the first hook.
Mm-hmm.
So, if I were to push on that pin right there, it would push this hook away from the lifting rod. So, when I push the card up against it, if the card has a blank spot in it, it'll push on that pin. And that means that it won't lift. If the card has a hole, the pin just goes right through the hole. It's not disturbed at all. This stays on the lifting griff, and up it comes.
How deceptively simple.
It does this. So here, this one's been deflected, and when the griff comes up, this one, the first one stays down. The other two, which have been left over top of the lifting griff, are raised, creating a shed.
It is simple.
It's sort of backwards, because the action you take, which is punching a hole, actually causes this machine to do nothing, and as a result, lift, because that's its default.
Yeah, you're programming
action.
The negative.
Yes. And that's a little hard to sometimes get that across.
If somebody wants to see this loom in action, where would they go?
They come to the Greenfield Village and Henry Ford Museum in Dearborn, Michigan. It's open 7 days a week, and it's demonstrated at least 4 days a week. If they want to find out for sure if it's going to be demonstrated, then they probably ought to call ahead. They can ask someone and maybe get an answer. But they go to Greenfield Village, which was founded by Henry Ford in 1929, and they can see us in operation.
Is there a website?
There is, www.thehenryford.org. People can go there, find all the information. The Greenfield Village and the Henry Ford Museum were founded by Henry Ford as a school, and he used his museum and the collections in the museum as the artifacts to describe history. About 5 years after he founded it in 1929, he opened it to the public, and the public is more than welcome. We get 1.5 million visitors a year, and we'd be happy to show people the Jacquard loom and all of the other activities that go on there.
What was the most surprising thing that you guys ran into when you were doing the restoration?
And one of the mysteries about the machine, we couldn't find a maker's mark on it anywhere. I mean, we knew about when it was acquired, because we knew the village started in 1929, and from the first weaver there, a man named Sidney Holloway, kept day books, just like the old weaver's day books. So we knew about when they started weaving on the Jacquard loom, but we couldn't figure out where it came from. So I was doing some poking around in the archives there, and I found the blueprints for the head, which meant that they built it in the machine shop at Greenfield Village. It was not a commercially acquired head. It was one they constructed there, and they also constructed the timber frame loom on which the Jacquard head is positioned. It was kind of fun, you know, a little detective work and figure out where that Jacquard head had come from, because we really were perplexed that there was no maker's mark on it anywhere, with no medallion, nothing to indicate where it came from. So we figured out it was built there.
Right. Which now, she's understating the significance of what she found, because there are 26 million documents in the archives of the museum, and this was a document that had never been archived. It had never been indexed. It was in an unprocessed box, and she found it. And so it was a pretty remarkable bit of archaeology that was done.
Was that the result of incredible luck or a lot of work?
Probably both. I'm a trained librarian, and so I've got some background in how things get organized. In an archival setting, even if the collection hasn't been processed and has nice finding aids, usually they try to put like things with like things. And so I stuck to things that were related to the craft program, the weaving program, or this first weaver that they had at the village, that sort of broad association. And I just looked through the materials that were sort of connected with that in some way. It took a little while, but I think there was some luck involved, too. I mean, like, the weaving goddess was smiling or something. You know, the planets were lined up properly. But it was very exciting when we found that and could finally pin down the history of that particular loom.
Yeah, no one knew. And one of the things that's been very interesting is that we have run into a woman named Carolyn Hodel, who was one of the students of Henry Ford, one of his first students at Greenfield Village in 1934. And she wove in the weaving shop in 1934 as a first grader and still weaves. And she's as sharp as a tack and a great lady.
It just shows how important it is to get kids weaving.
Absolutely.
That's right. Yeah.
When Henry Ford made the village, what was he trying to create?
Well, what he was doing was trying to preserve the artifacts of his childhood. He believed in education. He wanted to use his museum and his village as the tools and artifacts to be part of his school. He thought that the history of ordinary people would be told by looking at and using the artifacts of his childhood. He was a strong believer in learning to do by doing. He believed that ordinary people could do extraordinary things, and that the knowledge of that could be seen in the artifacts and the things that people had invented and created. That's why he wanted to bring all of that together to teach the young the importance and the vitality of American innovation. He really, really believed in that. So when you come to Greenfield Village, you'll find Henry Firestone's farmhouse, you'll find Orville Wright's bicycle shop, you'll find the actual buildings and the actual artifacts there, and people go there and come away inspired by what's possible, and that ordinary people do extraordinary things.
Everything about the restoration went really quite well, except how long had we'd been open? Maybe a month. And I was demonstrating one day, and I'm standing there weaving away and talking and explaining to people how the Jacquard head works and having a fine time. And a very large beam on the top of the loom fell off and hit me in the head.
Oh!
Which the two other restorers in their infinite wisdom had not thought was necessary to attach to the loom in any way.
Low priority. We'll get to it later.
Yeah. So
you guys actually do the demonstrations?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we'll be the demonstrators. We're actually the ones, there are a number of weavers who are in the weaving shop who tell the story of weaving and its development in America. They do some of the weaving that's there, but in terms of the training to be a good Jacquard weaver, we're the ones who will be doing that. The loom works quite well, but when it doesn't work, it works really badly. So you really need to know what you're doing to fix a mistake in there. And we can do that. The others are there to explain and give the story. So we really have a team working in the weaving shop.
Is the loom a bit fragile still?
No.
No, it's really not. It's pretty robust. It's in an old building, no air conditioning, lots of air blowing through it, and it's behaving really well.
Yeah.
But then when you think of the way these machines were used originally, I mean, they were in non-air-conditioned buildings as well, so I think they're pretty sturdy machines.
Thank you so much for sharing your experiences in this really interesting story.
You're welcome.
This episode, I'd like to thank ensemble members Kate Jantz-Kaprivnik and Barb Fessler for their production work on the interviews. Kate edited Alice Schlein's interview, and Barb edited the chat with Richard and Chris Jurian. Thank you for all of your hard work. Weavecast is brought to you through the generosity of our donating listeners. This week, I'd like to thank the following listeners. Catherine, who did a very interesting thing. She sent a donation that was $1 for each Weavecast episode. I really appreciate it. We also had Gina, who, if you listen to the credits, you'll recognize her as a longtime supporter of the show. Denise and Donna, thank you all for your support. Our sponsor this episode is Lone Star Loom Room, bringing you the finest Swedish yarns. They offer Egyptian cottons, linen, cotton, cotton rug warp, and more, all in their full color range at great prices. You can find them online at LoneStarLoomRoom, all spelled out, .com.